Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Brad Thomas, the PGA Tour, will join us. We'll talk some NBA, some golf, little college basketball, maybe even college football and NFL, see if he's bet any football yet. A little bit of a sampler platter with Brad. And it's that time of the year. I've been talking about the past few podcasts where you're just kind of biding your time until March. The days are getting longer, warmer, snow starting to melt. So spring, you can kind of sense it. We're not there yet. We still got a couple weeks to go in February, but it's getting there. We are slowly getting there. You know, last show was on Monday, taped it right before the All-Star game. And I actually thought the All-Star game Sunday was okay. And okay is a massive step up from what it's been in past years. I still think they need to give the dunk contest a little bit of a break, a breather. Nobody wants to do it. It's boring. Nobody's ever heard of those guys. But on Sunday, I don't know if it was the format. I don't know if it was the NBA just getting so much bad press all week with the tanking and people complaining about how bad the All-Star game was, or if it was a combination of the two, that the guys actually played harder for the most part. That championship game was not competitive, but for the most part, you got a much better effort than used to. I would say the only gripe would be, and it was something I talked about before, is you got to be able to turn on the game and know who's on what team, that kind of thing. It's hard to sit there and try to go through, all right, who, this guy's on that team, LeBron's on that team, dividing the U.S. team up. But it sounds like these guys don't want to play more than a quarter. That quarter format really gets them to play hard with the idea that it's a sprint and you don't have to play four quarters, and it brings a little competitiveness. So again, it was okay. It wasn't terrible. It was a massive step up from what it's been as the NBA returns on Thursday. And once you get to the playoffs, I do think we'll have a good postseason. And just looking at some of these matchups, and the first round is always too long. There's just too many teams that get in. But out west, if things held right now, and the Thunder have a two-game lead in the loss column over the Spurs, which is hard to believe that the Spurs could overtake them for the one seed. OKC 5-5 in their last 10, just have not played well. And boy, the idea that they could break the record, which was like plus 180, plus 170 before they hit their skid. And it's not even a skid. It's such a long, extended period of playing just mediocre basketball. It's looked like a different team, whether it's boredom, whether it's they're just flawed as a roster, combination of those two. But right now it would be Thunder versus Warriors. We'll see if the Warriors, with Steph at his age, this stage of his career, can play enough to keep them afloat and stay in the mix. With no Butler, the Warriors are drawing dead. I mean, Curry's always going to be exciting, but the Warriors, if that is the series, are not capable of really doing anything. I'm not sure that the Warriors ultimately make the playoffs because Steph seems like he's always in and out of the lineup. No Butler. It's possible. Maybe the Blazers catch him. Maybe the Clippers catch him. Then the Warriors could miss the playoffs altogether. But right now, Thunder, Warriors, Spurs and Suns, Nuggets and Timberwolves. That would be a fun one, a rematch of a couple years ago. And Rockets and Lakers would be a lot of fun. That's a tough matchup for the Lakers because the Rockets are just so young, have so much athleticism, and that's something that the Lakers really struggle with. Rumors starting up that Giannis could be in the mix for the Lakers this summer, which would not surprise me. I've heard the Lakers. Do you have enough to get him? Do you want to just go all in and figure, all right, Luke is not old, obviously, but he's not young, and you want to build a title team sooner rather than later. Last year you went out in the first round. Let's assume this year you're going to go out pretty early. You don't want to just act like you've got forever when you've got Luka. He's one of the best players in the sport. So do you do what you can to get Giannis and pair those guys together? Are those guys a fit? Luka likes shooting around him. That's not Giannis' strength, but I would not be shocked if that's Giannis' home, come next season. But Rockets Lakers would be a fun first round series. Then you go to the East. Again, the first round series, not great. But once you get past that round, I think you could be looking at some good matchups. Pistons Heat, if that's what it were to hold up, and Hornets breathing down the Heat neck. I wouldn't be shocked if the Hornets snuck into the eight. And the Hornets Pistons, I think, could be similar to the Pistons Knicks last year, where the Pistons fell short, couldn't pull off the upset, but you look back and could have won this game, could have won that game, and it's a building step for the Hornets. Hornets would be the proverbial tough out if they were able to get in, and they've played extremely well, 1 of 9 out of 10. They have really gotten off the mat here after a really bad start. So Pistons Heat, but I'll say Pistons Hornets ends up being the 1-8. Celtics versus Magic, not terrible. Knicks versus Sixers, that would be pretty fun. And then Cavs Raptors would also be the first rounder. And if you could just get these seeds to hold, you get something like Pistons Cavs second round, Celtics Knicks rematch second round, same team, same round as last year, that would be pretty good. And then in the West, if you get like Thunder, Rockets, Spurs, Nuggets, I wouldn't count out Minnesota. I think Minnesota is even more dangerous than the Lakers because they have Edwards. They've won. They've been to conference titles the last 2 years. They've got Gobert, who can be obviously a factor defensively. But if you get Thunder, Rockets, Nuggets, Spurs, that's a lot of fun. It's a good second round. And I think of all of the bets now, as you look at the futures, the Nuggets to win the West, a little over $3, plus 310, I think that's the best one. Watching OKC, maybe they'll flip the switch come playoff time, and maybe they're still a good, you know, couple possessions better than everybody in a big spot. But Denver pushed them last year. I know Denver got run out of the building in Game 7, but Denver had their chances. Indiana had their chances. And maybe Denver now, with a little better supporting cast around Jokic, could actually get it done. It would have to be on the road, it would look like. But maybe they don't have to play OKC. Maybe the Spurs, who have dominated OKC in the regular season, maybe that carries over, which I'm not sure it will. Sometimes there's no correlation between the regular season and the playoffs, and these teams, you know, flip a switch. You're more focused on the matchups. Your scouting reports are a little deeper. But Nuggets plus 300 to win the West, I don't think is a bad bet if you wanted to get greedy and go for, like, the exact finals matchup. Nuggets-Cavs is 15-1. That's not awful. Nuggets-Celtics, 19-1. That's not bad either. I'd probably, between those two, back and forth between the Celtics and the Cavs, I still don't trust the Knicks. I don't know. Towns and Brunson in a big spot. You got two minus defensive players. And if they weren't going to do it last year, I felt like last year was their shot. I'd probably take a shot at Nuggets, Cavs, 15-1, but don't hate Nuggets, Celtics, 19-1. Pistons being overlooked, I'm guilty of it too. Wouldn't be shocked if the Pistons are in it. And the odds reflect it. You look at the East, odds to win the East. Cavs are 3-1, Knicks are plus 330, Pistons are plus 350, and the Celtics are plus 380. They're all bunched up. All bunched up after that Celtics. After the Celtics is Sixers 11-1, Magic and Hornets right around 30-1, Miami 40-1, which is interesting because, like I mentioned, Heat ahead of the Hornets in the standings, but Hornets are 30-1 to win the East, Heat are 40-1, so that gives you an idea of what the market thinks about Hornets. There's some respect there with, you know, Knipple, all the young talent, all the draft picks they've had over the years starting to gel, starting to mesh, and they've been a legitimately pretty good team here for a couple of months. So we'll see. NBA won't pay much attention to it once March Madness gets going here in a couple weeks, but it's a nice rhythm to the sports calendar where March Madness ends and then boom, baseball's underway. NBA starts with their playoffs, their play-in. First round starts a little slow, but it's going to be a good, I think, postseason, even though the regular season is just, man, it's rough. And I am sick of hearing everyone's ideas of how to fix the tank. I know I was guilty of it and talked about it last week. And I mentioned that, hey, I think this is going to become kind of a big story. But it's, man, every time you look, turn on TV, Twitter, everyone's got a different idea. And then, of course, people have to one-up everyone else and come up with something more complicated, more creative to get rid of the tanking. So even though I'm guilty of it, I am sick of hearing everyone's ideas on how to fix the tanking, even though if you listen to Silver, it's pretty clear he's annoyed and something will be done. He gave his little press conference on Saturday and said, hey, enough's enough, basically. We got to figure something out. Everything's on the table, whether it's getting rid of the draft, getting rid of the lottery odds. I'm not sure what they ultimately do, but something will probably come of all of this tanking these last couple months. But we'll see what Brad Thomas thinks. We'll talk some NBA, some golf, some futures. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, should have been more podcast. We are back. You can catch his stuff. PGA Tour, where he writes and does a great job analyzing golf. He is big into NBA, MMA. He does a little bit of everything. So without further introduction, it is Brad Thomas. Brad, what's going on, man? Kind of the dog days of the sports calendar. How are you?
Man, I was better when you texted me and asked me if I wanted to join. I had so much optimism that my favorite soccer team would win the whole tournament. Some dumb decisions at halftime. Now, they basically played themselves out of it in the first round. And so now I'm just licking my chops and just trying to figure out how I can make money to make me happy.
All right. Hopefully we can do that. Let's start with NBA. It's amazing to think a couple months ago, like I was thinking OKC not only could break the record, but I actually thought they were going to do it. And now you fast forward a couple months. I don't even know if they're going to go over the 62.5 win total from before the year. They have fallen off a cliff here. I guess I'll start with this before we get to futures that you like. To win the West, OKC or the field? Your life depends on it. You are going with who?
At even? Man, I'm taking OKC. But honestly, like, if I'm getting -110 both sides. I have to take OKC. The depth they have, and you know, with SGA being out, I actually think while it's going to hurt like their standings, I think it's really good for them, like the younger players and the depth piece players, to learn how to play without SGA and not be so reliant. Long term, that's going to be really good for them. It doesn't help when you're losing games and you're trying to chase records, but I think that's one of the benefits to having a deep team is you're not afraid to turn to those younger guys or those role players as like some teams, right? Like if their best player is gone, they're done.
What do you make of their struggles? Is this just mid-season boredom, post-title boredom? Is it some of it is there's actually real flaws on the roster, like they just don't have enough shooting? What, or is it some combination of the of those factors? What's your take on that?
I think it's a combination of injury and, like, this is a team, first we'll say big injury, right? This is a team with not just SGA who's missed some time, but their premier big man and Isaiah Hartenstein missing time. And when you see them play against bigger teams like San Antonio Spurs or Wembanyama, when Hartenstein's not on the court, Wembanyama just has free reign to do whatever they want. No offense to Chet Holmgren, but I don't consider him a big man at all. Also, Jay Will's missed time too. But also, we saw, remember, I think we talked about this back when you and I used to run a show where we saw this happen to the Denver Nuggets. They won the championship, and I think we all just spammed Denver Nuggets win total under because the strive for excellence the year after you've won is so hard because you know you've played in the tournament, you've won the tournament, you know all you need to do is get in the tournament, and the tournament being the NBA playoffs, right? They don't need to be excellent. They just need to play good enough, and right now they have a 3-game lead over the San Antonio Spurs, right? Like, and I think when SGA comes back, they're going to kind of mend some of those bad losses, but they don't need to be perfect. They just need to get in, really.
Did you watch the All-Star game? What did you make of it if you did?
You know, this was the first time in a long time that I bet on the All-Star game. And I we actually went on VSiN and gave out the NBA stars to win it, +200. And I thought we'd get a little bit more of a competitive game, and that's what we got, right? We got these teams that didn't want to lose. And when you have some of those guys like the old heads on the Stripes team, their legs are going to be tired because they're going to give it really all. They're going to give it their all really early. Or like the world team who has just so many injured players dealing with nagging injuries. The All-Star game's weird. Because how much do you want these guys to try, right? That's number one. But number two, like, there's guys with nagging injuries who aren't going to try, and they're ultimately taking up a roster spot for someone else.
From an entertainment standpoint, I thought it was okay. It's better than what it's been. Okay is a huge step up from what it's been in the past. My one gripe here, and I don't know if they'll divert from it, I want to be able to turn on the TV and know who's on what team. I don't want to have like need a program or need a guide here to see who's on what team. That would be my one gripe. But for the most part, they played as hard as you could expect. The last game got away from the older team, but I thought it was okay. The dunk contest to me has got to go. 3-point contest is fine. The dunk contest is one that's just like, man, we're out of dunks. The good guys don't want to do it. The guys you never heard of are doing it. That's one that just needs a break, in my opinion.
The dunk contest is so stupid. And, like, I also think the judges are more about hype than they are about the degree of difficulty. Like, if stars aren't doing it, it's not fun. I think someone compared it to the Home Run Derby, and I thought that was really compelling, where the Home Run Derby, you see guys who are big names winning it, right? And it's all the big names. But also, you're not going to get hurt, like, going for a ton of home runs versus going for some dunks. You blow your ACL and your season's over, you know?
Yeah, and I don't even think it's the injury. I think these guys, they're very online. We know that with Durant and LeBron. They care what people think. They see what people think, regardless of what they say. And they're going to go out there, and if they do some lame dunk, people will make fun of them. If they do something that's unoriginal, people will make fun of them. And it's hard to do something original. I mean, you have one basketball, and you have a 10-foot hoop. There's only so many ways to put one through the other. I mean, you could put your hands over your eyes. You could do it backwards. You could go between the legs. At some point, you just run out of ideas, and these guys are just like, you know what? It's not really worth it. People will make fun of me, or it's hard to come up with something clever. So I think that's why they just kind of pass on it.
Yeah, it was like when it was at its height of popularity, you could do the free throw line dunk and everyone's going nuts. And Jackson Hayes did the free throw line dunk and got like one of the lowest scores of anyone who completed a dunk.
Yeah, I think that was a little farther in than the free throw line, wasn't it? There was not a lot of imagination.
It wasn't great. It was definitely not great.
If you had to bet one NBA future right now, awards, playoffs, win the title, anything, you would use it on what if you had like a free bet to use?
If I had a free bet to use, you know, this is kind of funny. I got a Utah Jazz to make the play-in at 500-1. But I'm going to go a different direction. Because they're now down to 40-1. And I'm going to go with Donovan Mitchell to win the MVP at 140-1.
Ooh.
And I talked about this a while ago where I have Luka to win the MVP at, I think it was 30-1 or something like that. The problem with a lot of these guys, the SGAs, the Jokic, Luka, and Wembanyama, all the guys who I have in front of Donovan Mitchell in my rankings, they're all so close to missing the threshold, right? Like Jokic misses one game, and misses two games, he's done. Luka misses like four games, he's done. Wembanyama misses like four games, he's done. There's still a whole half of the season. All you need is Donovan Mitchell is to keep playing great. And I think the team's going to slowly climb up the rankings. Right now they're fourth. They're on a five-game winning streak, won 9 of their last 10 games. The addition of James Harden's really nice. And also, it's like not even just the addition of James Harden, but the fact that Darius Garland was banged up and really wasn't reliable due to injury just has another superstar on that team, which helps them a lot. So I think at 140-1, Donovan Mitchell to win MVP is a home run.
Who do you like to come out of the East?
Oh, man. I did bet the Cavs to come out of the East. I think I got them at like... I got them before the price surge. I think they're, what are they now, 3-1?
Yeah, 3-1. There's like four teams that are all within like a dollar of each other.
Yeah, I got them at like 4 or 5-1. I like them to come out of the East. Don't trust the Knicks. Pistons are too young. Celtics are a weird team. They're so well coached, but I don't think they have enough firepower when it comes down to an Eastern Conference final games. But I do think it's going to be between the top four. I don't think there's any surprise teams this year like the Indiana Pacers last year.
So your finals right now, it sounds like you would lean towards OKC versus Cleveland.
I would lean OKC versus Cleveland, but for my money, right? Like I think that's a big difference. Like for my money, I'm not taking OKC to come out of the East. I think they're the West. They're -120. Like that just doesn't work for me. I'd rather take a team like the Spurs, who've beat OKC multiple times. I know they're young, and they were my excuse for the Pistons, right? Youth being the excuse, but there's an it factor about the Spurs team, and that it factor is Wembanyama. On his best day, he can be better and more impactful than any player in the NBA by a mile.
It's interesting because if they play OKC in the playoffs, which I hope they do, that would be a fun series. And as bad as the regular season is from a fan perspective, these playoffs could be awesome when you look at Spurs, Thunder, like a Nuggets Thunder series would be awesome. I mean, all of these different possible matchups are going to be really good. The Spurs just own the Thunder and beat them handily. Do you think that carries over to the playoffs, or is that just a regular season thing? I feel like if we get that matchup, you know, whatever happens, we're going to be like, oh, we should have seen it coming. This OKC was just playing around. They weren't really serious. OKC beats them. Or if the Spurs beat them, we'll say the same thing. Oh, we should have seen it coming. The Spurs have their number. I'm curious what you think and how that would play out.
I think it's going to be a compelling matchup regardless. I think chance of 7 games is really high. I think that we wouldn't be shocked, right? I think no matter what's going to happen in this game, like you said, it's going to be hindsight. Everyone's going to be like, oh, we should have known. Or, well, duh, right? Like, it's going to be one of those scenarios. And I just feel like they go head-to-head. The Spurs are going to be playing with so much confidence. Like, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to beat them.
Where do you think Giannis is in October?
Man, Giannis' saga has been actually really annoying. I actually am pretty upset that Giannis, and this is totally not answering your question, I'll answer in a second, but I'm pretty upset with what happened in social media and Giannis and then him partnering with Kalshi. Like, that's one of the most disrespectful things, where there's all this news that Giannis is going to get traded. Oh, they're in heavy talks with the Timberwolves. And then Kalshi's advertising it, and it becomes like so much money is being traded on Giannis' trade possibilities. And then the day after the trade deadline, he partners with Kalshi. Like, that's such BS. And I'm bitter because I did bet him to go to Minnesota. But, like, dude, just wait, like, a month. Or wait till the end of the season to announce it. Like, you don't have to do it the day after the trade deadline when you had the most activity of possible players traded. Where does he go? I hope he goes to somewhere he absolutely hates. I feel like the Timberwolves make a way for them for him to get there, right? Like the Timberwolves, their biggest thing, they didn't want to get rid of Jaden McDaniels, and I get it. I get it, right? But your window with the stars that you have now, it's not massive, right? It's not a team that's, I think they're going to build around Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards long-term. Anthony Edwards, yes, but Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy, right? Like those guys aren't long-term. They're not in it for the long haul. Their window's going to shut.
There has been a long history of stars in small markets finding their way to the Lakers. Do you think the Lakers – I actually wouldn't be surprised if it happened, but also don't think it's a great fit with him and Luka just because they kind of both want the ball in their hands. Luka wants shooters around him. I don't know from a fit standpoint, but I would not be shocked if they figure out a way to get him.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Like, superstars want to play there, like you said. I just feel like they would give up a lot, too, and they consistently have given up a lot. All right, you think DeAndre Ayton's going, so we get salary, right? Like, DeAndre Ayton's gone. Laravia's gone, which is not that big of a miss. Rui's probably gone, and then you have to part with Austin Reeves. So now you're leaving Luka. Imagine LeBron plays another year. That's like the bulk.
I don't know if he goes back to the Lakers, though. It sounds like he's going to go back to Cleveland.
It sounds like he's gone, but I think if the Lakers get Giannis, LeBron stays.
Right. That'd be fascinating. That would be fascinating.
This team would be so weird. I hope the Lakers don't do it, but these teams are so star hungry. And dude, tell me how many times it ever works. Like 1% of the time where the star hungry teams go and build these super teams in their eyes, they gut their teams, they get rid of all their depth, get rid of all their picks, and all they do is let someone else, OKC, get all the picks, get the potential superstar, and then go and build championship teams.
Yeah, which is interesting because Giannis is a year away from free agency. So if you really think you're the Lakers, you say, you know what? I mean, obviously you want him, but do we have enough to get him? And do you wait a year for one of these? If he really wants to go there and it's mutual, I mean, who knows? Anything else basketball? Do you believe in the Hornets? Can the Hornets like win a series? I can't believe out of nowhere where they've come. I thought they'd be feisty this year. And then I was like, man, I was wrong about that. They stink. And now they actually look like a legitimate team. Is OKC, are the Hornets a sleeper to actually like win a round or beyond, even though beyond seems like a stretch, doesn't it?
What are they, the sixth right now? They're ninth?
Then they're playing mix.
And they're 9-1 in their last 10. So let's average that out. Say they go 7-3 in their next 10. If they keep that going, that would probably project them the seventh seed. Then they'd play. No, they're not going to win a series.
So you don't think they can beat any of the Cavs, Knicks, Celtics, Pistons? They can't beat any of those teams.
They can't beat any of the top four, no. Not in a seven-game series. Maybe if it was back to a 2-3-game series, best 2 out of 3. Yeah, but not in 7.
They're fun, though. They'd be feisty. They'd be a pain in the neck. They'd be like what Detroit was last year to the Knicks, where they probably lose the series, but you look back and, man, they could have won that game. They could have won. When it's a growing pain type of year. I think they could be feisty.
They're a lot of fun.
At least push someone. They are fun. And that team hasn't been fun in, boy, literally like forever. I don't know, Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning, they have had like no memorable moments. They've been a black hole in terms of an NBA franchise. They've done really nothing. How do you benefit? And man, I've been talking about it, so I'm guilty of it, but I'm so sick of hearing about everybody's idea about how to fix tanking. But from a betting standpoint, do you stay away from these tanking teams? Do you embrace it and say, hey, it's baked in. I got to have an appetite to bet these teams. What's your approach to the Utahs of the world that, are prioritizing ping pong balls this stage of the season?
I think a lot of people need to realize that your biggest edge is going to be coming from knowing these teams inside and out. And, well, I will tell you, I cover a lot of sports, man. Like, I cover just about everything. Sometimes I don't know a team inside and out like I should. And tanking has really opened my eyes that you have to devote a little more time to knowing. I mean, you need to even know the guy who's on a two-way. And I don't mean just know his name and know his stats, but know how he fits into the offense, know his strengths and weaknesses, and know what role he has if he's plugged into the starting lineup. And since I've started doing that, man, I've been just cashing tickets on player props because, good example, right? Isaiah Collier, he's not a two-way guy, obviously, but Isaiah Collier, when that game where he played full game, no breaks, was thrusted into the starting lineup. His line was 13.5. His assist line was like 4.5. he smashed both of those first points and assists. He ended up having a double-double, 20 assists. And, like, you just have to know, though, like, but know that the ball's going to be in his hand because there's no Keontae George. Who else was out? Markkanen was out, and I'm missing one more was out. And, right, and, like, that just changes the complexity of the team. I don't mind it. From a game standpoint, it actually sucks. Like, it really sucks. But if you get two tanking teams against each other, it's really hard for one team just to pull the plug. But if you have a, like, if you have a game that's going on and team's down by 15, they're going to pull the plug early and be like, we're just tanking anyway. But if it's two, like, they're not against, like, I don't know, the Pistons, you can get some good value.
You're a Bama guy. Does Bama make a run here in the college hoops, or just not enough defense?
I don't know. I bet them to win it all, and it was my first time betting to win it all. This team is really weird because they have two lottery picks on their team. And I don't think either of them are good to just carry them by themselves. Amari Allen's a 3-and-D guy who is fantastic defensively, can shoot the ball, but he can't just be the man. And then Filon is the other guy who, I don't know whether it's injury that's holding him back, conditioning, but there's games where he just kind of goes ghost and makes poor decisions. And I think the poor decisions could come from the fatigue aspect. But any team that shoots a ton, it's high volume, they can always make a run because what happens is they get hot at the right time and that confidence just grows and grows and grows and they end up winning games.
What anything else college basketball? Or you just watch Bama, or do you have any other thoughts, futures that you'd look at?
I'll dig a little bit deeper in. I watch pretty much all the games, right? But I haven't dug all the way in into a spot where I feel comfortable.
When do you start looking at football for next year, college or pro?
I dabble now, but I really haven't gone to a point where I feel comfortable. I think now is just kind of getting early market stuff. Like if you could have got Darian Mensah at 30-1 to win the Heisman, that was a good price. Or if you even liked Arjun when he was 8-1 before the Cam Coleman news, like that was a good price. I think with college football, you always have to be sharp, right? Because the rosters now, it's going kind of like college basketball, where the rosters now are ever changing, especially the transfer portal. Like you look at teams like Alabama. Alabama used to be a consistent team where you knew who was coming back every single year. Alabama now is going to have like 10 returning starters on both sides of the ball. So you have to be really familiar with yourself, and that starts in the offseason. You're not going to learn it two weeks before the season starts.
Has Alabama Nation recovered from the butt-whipping on New Year's Day against Indiana? Did the fact that Indiana went on to win it all ease it a little bit, or probably not because this is Alabama and they have higher expectations than that?
I think it depends who you talk to. I think there's a lot of Alabama who was like, damn, Indiana whooped us, then whooped Oregon, and then the news came out about Ty, and I think that really helped a lot of people cope. I knew there was something wrong with Ty, and everyone was talking to me like I was crazy. I was like, dude, are you guys not watching? There's no way someone just falls off the face of the earth after having a Heisman campaign in the first half of the season, comes out, he has all these injuries, blah, blah, blah. That helps a little bit. But I think the soft aspect, the softness aspect, not being able to run the ball, you're Alabama, there's no excuse. I know you're running different. You're different run schemes and blocking schemes, so maybe you want different personnel. But you have a team, an offensive line littered with five stars. That didn't sit right with Alabama players, not being able to run the ball and not being tough at the line of scrimmage. Even Alabama's worst teams under Nick Saban. We've had some, right? Like, Alabama made the playoffs this year, right? Like we've had some Nick Saban teams that I was happy for them to go to the Citrus Bowl, right? They at least dominated the line of scrimmage. And the fact that they didn't dominate the line of scrimmage in 75% of their matches that were either SEC play or playoffs, that was concerning.
Golf, how's your season going? What do you like this week?
How's my season going? It's hard to replicate what happened last season in terms of this point of the season. Last season, I hit two outrights and a first-round leader before we even got to this point, right? And that just doesn't happen. I did hit, I guess I hit an outright and I hit two outrights so far. I had Chris Goddard up. That was probably the best kind of win or scenario for me for Goddard at Waste Management because, I mean, excuse me, Phoenix Open. I know they don't like to be called Waste Management anymore because I had Hideki Matsuyama and Chris Goddard. So there was zero chance of losing with Hideki on 18. And I positioned myself really well. And then at Pebble, you know, so this is a quick plug. Anybody who likes golf betting and likes in-tournament betting, I'm probably – I don't know, man. I don't like how to give myself a pat on the back, but I'm a really good in-tournament bettor. I'll put it that way. I do in-tournament betting for PGA Tour. Go to their social media accounts and go to their website the morning before every round. I gave out Colin Morikawa to win the tournament live, and I didn't even think that was going to come through, man.
What number? I didn't know that.
Dude, only 4-1. It was like, I gave out Sunday morning. I mean, like, I've had a handful where, like, I gave out Sepp Straka last season live. But I actually swept that day. I swept. I gave out three bets. I gave out Colin Morikawa live. I gave out Shane Lowry top 10 and gave out Russell Henley in his three ball. I mean, so I give out that stuff. And I think that helps. I'm down on the season right now. I might not be down. I might be even, but I'm down to my standards. Golf betting's hard. It's a lot of action for really high ROI, but you need to hit to get the ROI. And I've been getting crushed in the placement markets. I bet primarily off of modeling. And if my model has someone third, dude, of course I'm going to bet them top 20. But that doesn't necessarily mean I made my model correctly. That also doesn't necessarily mean I picked them at the right time. So I'm about even on the season after hitting Goddard up and getting a little Morikawa. Wish it was better. Haven't hit a first round leader yet. I've had a couple guys that were in second place, and I've also had a couple of guys who I bet to win the tournament, like Chris Goddard, who finished first-round leader, and Ryo Hitsatsune. I had him 150-1 to win the tournament, and he was first-round leader and didn't win, so.
Oof. Who's this week? Who we got this week?
Okay, so first I want to say this. I don't have my card ready, right? And I typically don't have my bets until Wednesday midday. I changed my philosophy. Last year was my worst year of golf betting in a while. And I'll just give the numbers because it tells the story a little bit better. Last year I finished, up 85 units on a one unit scale. And it felt like the worst year because what I would do was I would always be first to the market. I figure if I could beat the number, I would win more. And so I changed that philosophy about halfway through the season because I had 16 outrights last year. I think I was only at like 5 outrights midway through the season. And I was getting stuck with bad odds. Not stuck with bad odds, but putting myself in a corner. So basically, let's say odds come out and I really like Patrick Cantlay because he's 30-1. And then I build my card out and I'm like, well, I need at least 10 ROI. Most golf bettors need 7. I need at least 10 because I'm really aggressive. And if I'm going to be really aggressive, I got to have my opportunities to make my money back. But if I have them at 30-1 early, and then I like 5 other guys that end up falling in my model, I can't add them. I can't add all of them because my ROI is not going to be at 10. That said, I'm going to bet on Hideki Matsuyama. And I did this with Waste Management with Sahith Theegala, where sometimes there's just tournaments. It's okay if you back yourself in a corner. If you have a guy who you knew at the start of the season you were going to bet them there, as long as the number cooperated, Hideki around 25-1. I am nervous. I'm going to be honest. I'm nervous about his game right now. And it's hard to say you're nervous about someone's game when all they're doing is contending, right? Like, Hideki has just done nothing but contend to start the season. In November, he won the Hero, right? Finished T13 at the Sony Open, T11 at the Farmers Insurance, second at Waste Management, but he was standing on 18 with the lead to win, and T8 at Pebble Beach. But one thing that we've noticed, in that span, Hideki had went from gaining 1.5 strokes off the tee at Hero. Then it dropped, Will. It dropped down to gaining just 0.5 at Sony. And then what? It gets progressively worse, lost 0.5 at Farmers. Did it correct itself? No. And even if he didn't lose 3 strokes off the tee at Waste Management at Phoenix Open, he still would have been around -2 strokes off the tee at Phoenix Open. And then It carried on to Pebble where he lost another minus 1.8. I'm saying that because I do worry, but I had already circled that I'm betting him here. He is the defending RIV champion. I can't call him the defending champion here because obviously this was played at Torrey last year. But in a golf course that's really that's going to play long, going to play firm and fast if the water, if the wanes, the rain stays away, he's a good bet. And the guy's been putting his lights out. He can make every shot on the course. He's really good at holding and controlling his spin, which makes him a threat to win here. 25-1 is a really good price. I feel like if you look at the market around him, it's Xander at 20. Like, I'm not ready to be there on Xander. Tommy's fine at 25, 20, whatever. Cantlay hasn't won in forever. Morikawa was just 90-1 last week. Morikawa goes from 90-1 to 28-1. Sure, if he wins back-to-back, but you're telling me I'm getting $65, I'm getting 65, robbed off $65, not happening, and then Russell Henley. Like, the market around Hideki is just not the same caliber. So I think Hideki at 25-1 is probably my favorite bet so far.
Brad, you're the man. This is great. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Mr. Brad Thomas. PGA is PGA Tour on social media and on their website, pgatour.com. And if you like soccer, I do a weekly show. Go to Rumble. It's BetUS TV. Thank you.
That'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Friday. Maybe talk a little baseball. We will start to dive in more to baseball. Spring trainings, I believe, get underway. The games get underway on Friday. So baseball, not quite back yet, but we are getting there. So rate, review, subscribe. See you then.